is a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it!
Hello, good afternoon, Aston Villa fans, and welcome to the Villa Forever podcast. I am your host, Chad Williams. Please subscribe, help me to the road to 2K, make sure to give me a follow, and you can follow me on Spotify, Apple and Amazon Music, and other platforms. Also, let's spread awareness of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. On this very special interview episode, I'm joined by my special guest, Brad Friedel, who was a former Aston Villa goalkeeper from 2008 to 2011. He made 114 appearances for the football club. His career, he played for Brøndby, Galatasaray, Liverpool, Blackburn Rovers, Aston Villa, Tottenham Hotspur, and the US national team. He holds the record for the most consecutive Premier League appearances, 310 appearances, most appearances from North America and South America, Premier League player, 250 appearances, and he was the oldest ever player for Aston Villa. And when he retired, he was 39 years old, 259 days when he left Villa, and also he was the oldest Tottenham player as well. And also, I have a big connection with Brad, because many years ago, I met Brad Friedel at Acorns Children's Hospice, and it was a very nostalgic time, bringing back memories, and it always brings a lot of real good nostalgia. And this podcast was meant to be tonight. And Acorns still today a very special connection with Acorns Children's Hospice. Delighted to have the show, Brad. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good. It's quite an introduction. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, it was good. Well, many years ago, Brad, I met you. I think I remember it was with me and my sister. We made Christmas cards with you.
I remember it because Acorns was on the front of our shirt. I went to Acorns quite a few times, and I know Acorns did a lot of fantastic things with and through Randy Lerner at the football club at the time. But I do remember meeting you. That was quite some time ago now. Yeah.
Does it go with Acorns? We was actually one of the first Premier League teams to a charity sponsor on our shirts. And yes, a lot of fans have like a special bond with that.
Yeah, I think, I believe at one stage, wasn't Barcelona, UNICEF as well. I think it allowed... It allowed for us to do quite a bit of charity work in so many different ways. And at every football club that I was at, the players are always more than willing to help in any way that they can. Unfortunately, not every club has the commercial setup to really be able to help as much as we can. But that was not the case at Aston Villa. And they proved that by putting Acorns on the front of the shirt, which is probably the most, other than the stadium naming rights, the most aspiring place for a company or a sponsor to put their name and logo. So that was a really great thing that Randy Lerner and his team did.
That was during the Martin O'Neill era, when we finished 6-3 times on the trot.
Yes, Martin. Martin was a very, or is, I shouldn't say was, he is a very intelligent human being. He was one of those managers. I wouldn't say he's a head coach. He was a manager who knew how to get a group of players together to compete.
Yep.
You know, he liked that mix of experience and age, hence bringing me in at 37 years of age.
You got the best out to every single player.
Correct. Gabby Agbonlahor was young at the time. Ashley Young was young at the time. He brought in James Milner, who is a tremendous player and professional.
Cillian Petkov.
Yeah, but then I was going to say he had the likes of myself and Martin Larsson. Stylian Petrov, Emil Heskey, you know, to bring in some experience, and we had really good players. It was I'm sure the all the Villa fans enjoyed watching that era.
Yeah, and bro, I just want to say thank you for giving me those memories. It wasn't players like yourself, or great players like you. And you gave me those memories, so thank you.
No, it's what fans have to remember. There are memories as well. You know, we when you're a player and you come into such a well-run club, you immediately, as a player, become part of the family. You know, and again, not every club is run like that. So this is something that Aston Villa needs to be proud of, and the fans are a big part of that. So you know, within a preseason and then a month into the season, I, as a new player, felt like part of the family. It did not take long. So and that has very little to do with me, because it, you know, I'm coming into a new environment. That has everything to do with how the club receives players, how Martin O'Neill's staff received players, and then how the fans took to the players and received the players. Of course, we need to be good professionals. Yep. Of course, we need to get results. But the Aston Villa has so much going for it that unless you're at the club, people don't know. Yep. nor would they know. But
Aston Villa, it's a very big club, but a traditional football club. It's a great fan base.
The fan base, home and away, is tremendous. I also like the fact that the fan base can also be a little bit glasses is half empty, which is good for a player. It's good for a player. It keeps us on our toes, because you know that if you don't perform, those same fans that will back you to the hilt, they'll push you also, and you need that as a player. But I thought they always did it in the appropriate way, you know. So not saying that they had to be happy when we lost games. That's normal not to be happy. But I thought the fans were a very educated fan base and applied the right amount of pressure to get the performances back up.
Yeah. So we'll get into the questions then. So considering the popularity of football in America when you started your career, why did you choose football? And what was it like to represent your country?
Why I chose football, I played and was very good at basketball, ice hockey, and tennis. I chose football because I loved it the most, and I was willing to what some would perceive as making sacrifices to try to be the best. I didn't perceive those as sacrifices. Playing for the national team. When I was growing up, because we didn't even have a professional league, it ironically was something I never dreamed about doing because I didn't even know it existed. And I know this will sound strange for somebody that born and raised in England, but I didn't even know until I was, probably 15 years of age, so it was the 86 World Cup. That was the first World Cup I watched on TV, watched highlights of 82 on VHS back in the day, or Beta maybe, I can't remember. But I didn't even know the US could even have a chance of qualifying until 1990, and that's when I was going into university. So if you think about that, for the first 17 or 18 years of my life, I never even knew a youth national team or a national team existed, to then being really fortunate to play in two Olympics and three World Cups.
Good morning to America.
It's
The
quite
goals over there. The number one sport is the NFL. Like, you got obviously baseball, American football. And also in America, it's not really always part of the culture. Where in this country, for example, in England, it's part of everyday life. But I do think in America, though, over the years, it's grown in popularity.
It's grown a lot, and it still has a lot more growth to make. But you are absolutely correct, and there's a lot of other competition. You have NFL, American football, you have baseball, you have basketball, you have ice hockey, you have NASCAR, you have bowling, you have cornhole, you have pickleball, you have golf, you have tennis. There's millions and millions of people that watch the other sports. So, unfortunately, in my lifetime, I don't think it's ever going to make its way to the number one sport. But fortunately, it grows every year. Maybe in another 30, 40 years, it can be up in the top one or two as more generations turn.
Well,
But
you got next year, you got the World Cup then, because in America, Mexico, and Canada, so that will help out and really help that will.
It'll help again. We had the World Cup in '94, and it helped create the MLS. Now we have this World Cup in 2026, also integrated with two other countries, which will help again. This one, I hope it helps to bring more notoriety in the commercial sector and the television revenue sector that can help enhance both USL and MLS going forward. We had the Club World Cup last summer, so there's a lot of events that have been coming, and it's growing year by year. But we, as I said earlier, we still have a lot of other competition. And but we have to keep trying to grow it.
Does it in your mind 82 international caps and you played in three major tournaments for the US as well?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I played two Olympics and three World Cups for the US. And on the youth side of things, I also played in the Pan American Games. We had the Olympic Festival matches and things of that nature. Playing for the national teams is an incredible honor, as anyone will tell you that plays for their country. This summer, I will be an active fan, wanting the United States to do well in all the games. It's kind of nice now. The older I get, the less emotional I get with, and I just enjoy watching the game as a fan. So, hopefully the US can get out of their group and then make a run of something. Let's see what happens. But it'll be exciting, that's for sure.
Good bit at the start of the show. I mean, you don't mean to remind you about your age.
I look in the mirror and it reminds me every day. It's okay.
So growing up, what footballers did you idolize? And why did you want to be a goalkeeper?
Yeah, I played outfield as well growing up, but I really loved being a goalkeeper. You know, back when I was growing up, in Cleveland, Ohio, we really only had two teams that would pop on the telly every now and again. One was Bayern Munich and one was Liverpool. So my first memories were Jean-Marie Pfaff in goal in the bright yellow for Bayern Munich. And then, but my true love was Liverpool. My dad had taken me to over to England when I was 10 or 11, and I watched Liverpool from that point on. And then the goalkeeper was Ray Clements at the time, and then so he became sort of a boyhood idol, and then followed on. Bruce Grobbelaar came in a little bit with his antics. It was quite fun to watch, but those Liverpool teams back in the 80s were something. They were remarkable. So those were although Pfaff, Grobbelaar were not my style of goalkeepers, you know, but I truly loved watching them play. But Ray Clemens, if you look at my style and him, you know, more of the consistent figure, you know, quiet, more subdued, you know, like I really admired Clem.
In the Premier League, so the Premier League era, you're my favorite goalkeepers. Because I think of the Premier League, especially Aston Villa. Also, you got Emi Martinez, I think Mark Bosnich. I think you're up there, you know, in that category. You're amongst those goalkeepers.
Well, that's what's brilliant about football is everyone will have their opinion on who they like. You know, I played football for two reasons. One, because I loved it and it put a smile on my face, and the second was to try to be the best at my profession that I could be. You know, and it worked out at most all the clubs where I became a number one. I was fortunate to lift a number of trophies through my career, you know, I had a great time of it. Aston Villa, you know, if someone wants to compare me or a Mark Bosnich or an Emi Martinez, that's great. You know, it that's what makes that make that's what
Well,
makes
so
football tick.
this, you sent him a few years ago. You and Mark Bosnich congratulating Emi Martinez. I think I saw that video, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he had I think he matched a clean sheet record, a single season clean sheet record that I'm not sure if I never looked at records in my career, to be honest with you. So I'm not sure if I had broken Mark's and then Emmy broke mine or tied mine or whatever. But one thing that is for sure, Chad, is that records are there to be broken, you know, and that just means the sport's getting bigger and better, and players are getting better. And you know, so if anyone holds a record, even my 310 games in a row, that'll be a hard one to break, but eventually someone will break it. That's
Of course, yeah.
what happens.
Good. What do you think of Martinez?
Oh, tremendous goalkeeper.
He's
Really, really
world
good.
class.
Yeah, very nice man as well. Very good professional. He's one of the top ones out there.
You can get what I like about him as well. He's got a big personality. In the Villa team, do you need that some sort of that presence? And also, he's a World Cup winner. That's what he brings as well, the experience as well.
Yeah, he if I know there was a lot of talk about him leaving, that would have been a big loss for Aston Villa if he left. He would be very difficult to replace.
Does he mean big shoes to fill, they would?
Yeah, and I think you would need to know well in advance that he's leaving. So you could have 6 or 7 months, maybe even more, of finding a suitable replacement, because you can find them, but they're very expensive. So that would be a tough one.
How did it feel to be a Premier
Oh.
League player?
I realize that more as I'm retired than when I was doing it. I try to explain this to people. Like when you're a young boy playing in youth football, and let's say you're 15 and you make it to a YTS contract the next season, it just seems normal. And then if you make it again into a professional contract, it seems normal because you can, for your whole life, you've continued to make the next team. So I think what is a shock is for the people that obviously don't get offered the contract, because that's all of a sudden not normal in their development and their as they get older. So for me, I was always really fortunate that I always got that next contract. I definitely didn't take it for granted that I was there. I worked really hard to get to where I was, but I never sat back and said, "Wow, I'm a Premier League player," you know, coming from the United States. I never thought about that until I was retired. And then you think about it, I was a young kid playing all these other sports out of Cleveland, Ohio. Wow, it's pretty cool. I became a Premier League player because we didn't even have a professional league in the United States at the time. So, so now that I'm much older, yeah,
The Premier League, the best
go ahead.
league in the world, the best league in the world, you play with some excellent players, against them as well.
Absolutely. And I think, like, when you look back, everybody can have their opinion on, excuse me, on what the best football is, and whether you like it now or back then. But I have to say, I haven't seen a stronger Premier League than between 2000 and 2010. The Premier League then was powerful. Like every single team had almost world-class players in it, at least two of them. You know, there was a time when you'd play Middlesbrough and you're the strike force was Hasselbaink and Viduka. Then you'd play Bolton and you're playing against an Anelka Nolan Davies, like these guys, but Nicholas and Anelka, Yori Djorkaeff, JJ Okocha. You're
All the
going, you're
internationals.
correct. You play Portsmouth and you're playing against Kanu and Yakubu, and even Sheringham was there at a time, and Sol Campbell. And I like it was quite a remarkable time for the Premier League. And I know the game evolves and the game's brilliant today, but back then, you play Newcastle and you're playing against Les Ferdinand and Alan Shearer together, and then Michael Owen goes there every single game. I was at Blackburn for 8.5 years, and the strikers that we had there, we were from Matt Jansen to Andy Cole to Dwight York to Roque Santa Cruz to Craig Bellamy. I mean, they're all great players. So that era was, looking back, and I'm really, really happy I played in that era, because
And every season,
it was fun.
the Premier League gets harder and harder. It's getting more competitive.
It is it if you look at the If you look at the relegation potential list and the Champions League potential list right now on the league table, it's almost from 9th or 10th place can go up, and from 11th place down can go down. Like
Oh, yeah.
it will not be a boring season, that's for sure.
Think about the teams, okay? At the top, right? Because obviously, when you were playing football, got a so-called top six, what they call it now, but even the top eight, or in between top 10 teams, that's how tight it's going to be.
Yeah, and then you have teams like a Brentford and Brighton who took a real strong analytical approach to get to where they are, and they have an incredible amount of revenue in the transfer market. So th that's what one of the main reasons why they can compete against anybody now also. So not only do they have the television revenue, but they have a very good cycle of revenue from transfer fees, but their recruitment policies are tremendous, so they can always replace. So not only can they replace, they're earning money as they replace. So if you get stuck in a bad 2 months, you're what you would normally consider small teams, they'll surpass you quite easy in the Premier League.
Let's talk about Blackburn Rovers. So, what is your bond to Blackburn Rovers? I remember the club. You spent the longest there. Do you have a big bond with them?
I have a huge admiration for Blackburn fans. I have a huge admiration for the old board at Blackburn. I thought Tom Finn and John Williams and Andrew Pincher and Martin Goodman and Rob Corr worked with the Sir Jack Walker Trust incredibly well to run a family club. We were, I think, in 8.5 seasons, we competed in European football, five or six of those for a club the size of Blackburn. That's quite remarkable. People also forget, just because of the recent troubles Blackburn's had and staying in the championship, that in 1995 they're one of the few teams to win the Premier League also. So I thought Graham Souness did an incredible job when he was a manager there, and I thought Mark Hughes took over the reins and did another outstanding job. It's really unfortunate what has happened, since the Sir Jack Walker Trust sold the club, because the club that I knew is not the club that it is today. Hopefully someday they can get it back up to the Premier League, because I had
You never know, maybe the future, maybe.
yes, maybe. But it's as a far as a family-based club, it was phenomenal. I would probably
Blackburn, actually, I was going to say, Blackburn Rovers is a very historic club. They got some great players. Tim Sherwood, he was a former Aston Villa manager. Of course, Alan Shearer, Robbie Savage. He was once again, I think he's always been a big, pretty big club.
Two guy, myself,
Course, yeah.
Damien Duff, Andy Cole, Matt Jansen, David Dunn, Lucas Neal, Ryan Nelson, Chris Samba, Michael Gray. We had a lot of really good players. Always. No, the club did an outstanding job back then. I can only hope that I'm still involved in football and around when they get back up to the Premier League.
So, what are your memories of signing for Aston Villa? And what was your relationship like with Brad Guzan?
Oh, Brad! I just spoke. Brad just retired. I just spoke with him a couple days ago. He just played his last game, his last professional game of football
Oh,
last weekend for Atlanta. Relationship, but I'll answer the second question first. My relationship with Brad Guzan was incredible. We still remain very good friends today. Great guy, really, really
he
super
was
guy.
number one because I didn't bring Guzan, but he was your understudy for a few seasons. But then years later, he became an Aston Villa number one himself.
Correct. Correct. And he's a really hard worker. He's a very re great character. Really, really good guy to have on your team. You asked a question about how I came to sign with Villa, how that was. I was at Blackburn and I was getting ready to sign a contract extension with Blackburn. And I met with John Williams, who I had a really good relationship with at Blackburn. And I always wanted to know that if we were selling players, which I knew Blackburn had to, that we were going to replace the players. And on this particular occasion, I asked him, I said, are we going to be a selling club or are we still going to bring a striker in if we have to sell? And he said, not only are we a selling club, but we are selling the actual club. And I was like, oh. So Manchester City put a bid in for me, and Aston Villa put a bid in for me. Mark Hughes had just gone to Man City from Blackburn, and I knew him well. And I lived in Manchester, and that seemed like the likely destination. But they were having a lot of internal issues. Their buyout had not taken place. Shinawatra owned the club at the time, and they had some financial difficulties. And the
Did they
club
have a new
seemed
owners? Did they know?
they
Did you
hadn't
take
arrived.
over?
Yeah, they hadn't arrived yet. The takeover was still 18 months away. So I drove down the M6, and I met with Martin. And after meeting with him, I was very impressed by him, very impressed by the club, and I agreed to sign with Villa there and then. That's how it happened.
In summer 2008, I remember that season, Martin O'Neill was doing a summer rebuild. And Carlos Cuellar, the likes of Steve Sidwell, they also signed for the club that
Yeah.
same summer.
And Nicky Shorey did. I think Luke Young came in. I mean, when I signed, I think my first training session, we only had 11 players. Gareth Barry was still there. We hadn't signed, James Milner hadn't been signed yet. Ashley Young was there. Gavi Agbonlahor was there. Martin Larsson, Curtis Davies was there. Nigel Rio Coker was there. Marlon Harewood was there.
Great team then.
John Carew was there. But at the time I actually signed, like some there were there I remember there were only 11 players out on the pitch. We had Isaiah Osborne was there, obviously, as Nathan Delafonso was coming in to train with the first team. Andreas Wyman was coming in to train with the first team, but we didn't have a lot of what I would call senior professionals in the changing room when I first signed.
That's a great group of players there. Maybe that we was consistently. There's a consistent team as well. But also they seem to be consistent.
Yeah, we were very difficult to beat. We were very difficult to break down. But on top of that, we had some incredible physical ability up front. You know, John Carew was a he was a monster up front.
He have your own chance? Because John Carey. He had a chance. His own chance.
John Carew was one of the most difficult players to defend against when he wanted, when he wanted to put the full effort in. Ashley Young had some incredible pace, dynamic. James Milner, incredibly dynamic. Gareth Barry, one of the greatest passers
Yes.
in Premier League, and
We'll
then
agree.
Gabby be especially before he had gotten a couple of injuries, but I mean he was fast throughout his whole career. He was so fast. Like it was really difficult
Lots
for
of pace.
and strong. Like he was a big, strong guy. On the field sometimes if you're watching the telly, he didn't look as big as he was, but he was a strong guy. So we had a lot of weapons in that team. But that was how Martin O'Neill used to put his teams together.
How would you describe your time at the club during the Martin O'Neill era? And we'll talk about also, how did you feel when he resigned from the football club?
I was shocked when he resigned. We were at training. We were in we were, I think about a week before our first game, getting ready to play. And I'd driven back to my house after training, and at about 3 o'clock, half past three, something, I saw the ticker on Sky Sports News that Martin O'Neill had resigned. All the players, we started calling each other, we're like, "What's happening?"
Well,
Like
you know,
none
the
of
day
no.
that he resigned,
N
I was actually at the training ground, and I was, because Eichhorn's were doing an event, and I was actually there the day that he left. And after that thing, the club went
you
on more of a downward spiral.
we as players knew nothing was happening like that. We had no idea. So it threw my third year. Like I had always envisioned that I would sign another 2 years or 3 years at Aston Villa and then retire from there. But that last year there was a lot more sort of turbulence inside the club because obviously when Gerard Houllier came in, he became ill. Unfortunately, and so we were really destabilized that third season that I was there, which was a shame. I would have, I think all of us would have thought that Martin was staying and was happy at the club. Like we didn't see anything else other than that. That was a big
What it
surprise for
is,
me.
I think it was the timing of it. I remember it was before the new season started.
Well, I think the problem more, I know more about the situation obviously today than I knew back then. The problem really has to do also with the transfer window not coinciding with the start of the season, because as the transfer window stayed open longer, I believe Martin felt that he was entitled if he to spend money on transfers if we were selling players. And I think there was a discrepancy between how much money he was allowed to spend on new transfers, and he didn't feel that it was an adequate amount of money to be able to replace a James Milner and a Gareth Barry.
Because we came
And
very close to Champions League football, we not only missed out on it.
what was that?
But we missed out. You remember when we didn't get Champions League football as well?
Yeah, we were close to it. The first season, we definitely should have achieved it. I felt that we were probably 8 to 10 goals away from it, so maybe another goal scorer in that January window. But we were close, and I think Martin wanted to he wanted to push on in that third season and really attract the extra goal scorers to get us into the Champions League places. And I think the Lerner family had had to correct some finances. So I just think it was unfortunate because the Randy Lerner is a very, very nice man. He was a very nice human being. Paul Faulkner is a very nice guy. Sharon, as you know, at the club, who's still there, is very, very intelligent and very very bright as well. So it was just unfortunate, to be honest with you, that that's how it transpired. Because I don't think there was any intent to upset either side. It just didn't work out, and we were all surprised when Martin left, unfortunately.
I'll get a few questions. And before I finish, what was it like playing in the Europa League? It used to be the UEFA Cup.
It was very, I mean, fantastic to play European football. There were certain seasons, and actually Aston Villa was one of them, where we had a couple of tremendous atmospheres, like playing Ajax at home. That was a great atmosphere. We had I had a couple of European nights at Liverpool, in the old setup. A lot of European nights with Blackburn, and also with Tottenham. I think the European nights, it all depends on who you're playing against. So when you play one of the European, the
It's
traditional
extra
European
special
greats,
because
yeah, the
I went to a few
atmosphere can get
games.
incredible.
Got other Villa fan, I went to a few Champions League nights, and it was absolutely incredible.
It's really brilliant. I remember a couple of nights, Celta Vigo back in the day, Celtic. That was a incredible atmosphere when I was at Blackburn, playing against Lazio, Inter Milan, like some incredible games, home and away. Valencia
Happened
back
to
in the
win the
day.
Europa League. Emery, Aston Villa, not in a good chance. Winning the Europa League with Emery's record, he can't underestimate any team.
No, and in the history of his managerial career, he's been a cup genius. So he's a lot of people that have been managed by him say he's tactically the best that they've ever worked with.
I've got two more questions before we finish. So, how does it feel to walk out at Wembley Stadium and get so close in the final against Man United?
Well, walking out's a special feeling. I wish the referee would have done his job in the early parts of the game. That could have
I agree.
that could have helped us if we had VAR. I know VAR's had its ups and downs, but I'm pretty sure VAR would have been on our side that day. Unfortunate we didn't win, but always a special occasion to go out at Wembley.
Let's get rid of the. It's 2-1. Is James Milner not going to early lead with a penalty? And the only thing they not die, that Vidic should have been sent off.
He definitely should have. I don't think anyone questioned it except the referee on the day.
Yeah, 100%. Actually, I was there. I was at Wembley that day. I was there as well. The thing with you, I always got a lot of memories from that era. Like I
Yeah,
said earlier, the fans that they want memories.
we had good teams back then.
How does it feel to hold the most consecutive appearances record? And also, he was the oldest player to represent two Premier League teams.
Yeah, the oldest player. I guess that's just me keeping myself fit, and goalkeepers can play a little bit longer. Looking on the consecutive games, I never really took notice of it as I was playing, but looking back on it, I guess what I like about it the most is I did it over three clubs with four or five different managers. So, it I guess I proved to myself that I could be play in different systems, play at different clubs, and impress quite a few different managerial styles. So I guess I take a little bit of pride in knowing that.
Brother, just want to say thank you. You've been a great guest. Do you mind my day?
Chad, it's been a pleasure, and thanks for reaching out to me.
So, brother, what are you doing there? Do you live in Turkey?
Yeah, I live between Istanbul and the Bahamas, and I consult for quite a few different companies, and work heavily in the analytics of football.
Well, yeah, well, wish you the best for your future. I really enjoyed the interview.
Thank you, Chad. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone, for watching. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to make sure to subscribe. Make sure to smash the like button on this video. Make sure to share it on all your socials. And if you're listening via audio, make sure to leave us a good review. Also, let me know your thoughts in the comment section. Thank you so much, Brad, for your time.
Thank you,
Going to
Chad.
wrap up this episode with Villa Forever, as always, and up the Villa.